hour number two. Richard Sauter, PhD, my guest. His book, Kundalini Tales, and we're talking about Richard Sauter's life, in a way, his experiences. A few more of those experiences will be shared this hour. You want to call in and talk, you're welcome. 1-888 on radio, 888 on radio. Coming up in an hour, David Slater will join us with the latest on cell phones. But everywhere I go now, more and more people have cell phones, and they're holding them up to their heads, and they don't have any idea what's going on. We'll tell you about that and bring in the latest scientific data in 1 hour. All right, Richard, some other instances that make this book so unique, some of the other experiences and events that Richard Sauter, PhD, and MA, MS, have experienced?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have gotten into in Kundalini Tales is the problem of electronic mind control. As I was setting down my thoughts for this book, I kept running across information, for whatever reason, of and about people who alleged that they were being surreptitiously targeted by shadowy agencies that were broadcasting voices into their head. Some of the stories I read were just ghastly, of people who were being absolutely mentally tortured. And at first I thought these people truly are Fruit Loops. You know, there are all kinds of people in the wards of mental hospitals claiming that the CIA or the FBI or the National Security Agency or the KGB or the Mossad are beaming electronic broadcasts into their mind trying to control them and modify their behavior. And I thought, yeah, these people are Fruit Loops. Until I did some more research and found out, indeed, there are patents for electronic devices that will do just that and more, that will actually extract your brain waves electronically from a distance.
And read your mind.
Read your mind. Send your brain waves through a computer, digitize your brain waves, rebroadcast them through a modulated radio wave back into your mind, changing your thoughts. And this is frightening. These are patents that are available in the open literature. That's dismaying enough. I'm afraid that even worse technologies of electronic mental control are in the hands of these covert agencies, spy agencies, intelligence, and military agencies. And for the life of me, I don't know where we're going to end up, but I fear that these people who are coming up with these inventions and using them do not have the best interests of the human species at heart. I don't know why they're doing this. It's frightening, and yet the technologies are real. I set out some of these patents as a lengthy appendix in the rear of my book. There's the capacity, for example, to take you, and I show how this is done. The patents actually describe how this is done.
Oh, they do.
You wire up people's skulls with all these electrodes, and you have them think different thoughts. You have them experience different emotions, and then you record using very sophisticated devices that are similar to complex EEG machines. You record these people's brain waves, and you store them, digitize them, and store them in computer files. And if you do this for a sufficient number of people and you average them, you find out what the mental profile is for the average mental profile for the state of fright or of anxiety or of loathing or of rage or of panic, and on and on. And once you have that, your data bank, it remains simply to take that out of your computer file, modulate a radio wave with it, and broadcast it at the target individual, the target population, to induce in them a feeling of helplessness or laziness or panic or fear or rage or greed or hatred or on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about something that's in the realm of fantasy. This is here and now technology.
Oh, yeah. These patents go back, as you've listed in the book here, to the 80s.
Well, the patents go back to then. I believe the actual technologies predate the 80s.
Would agree with that, judging by what we've always heard in this program about that process. Sure, by the time it gets to the patent office, it's often operational. The issue then is quite clear. The technology exists. It is... in all probability operational, has been tested on all of us, from everything from the neighborhood ice cream truck to satellites flying hundreds of miles and maybe thousands of miles ahead.
That's right. And you know, the military puts up a lot of classified satellites with very sophisticated electronic capabilities. We simply do not know what those satellites do. And are not likely to find out very easily. I am afraid that in many respects, these covert or black projects where this sophisticated satellite electronic technology is concerned is engaged in social engineering and manipulation of the mass consciousness in very dark and negative ways. I fear that that's truth.
They're probably not trying to engender philanthropic mindsets in the people they're targeting usually, although it certainly could be done. That's the same old axiom we get back to, though. All of these dark technologies we've talked about for years on the program can be used for the opposite, the antithesis of what they are being usually deployed for. They can be turned around, whereas disease states can be created in human beings with radio frequencies. Cures can be elicited just as easily by broadcasting radio frequencies of the proper configuration.
That's right. Every organ in the body has a characteristic frequency at which it resonates when it's in its healthful mode of functioning and when it's in a diseased mode of functioning. And the healthful functioning can certainly be aided by proper energies, proper vibrations that bathe the organs, the tissues, the cells. And why we're not doing this, Jeff, I don't know.
Well, really. Royal Rife did it in the 30s.
Yes, he did. But the problem is, you know, the American Medical Association and other professional guilds like that around the planet that have a vested interest in prolonging and promoting disease, notwithstanding what they say. It's the profit motive. If you're well, they can't make much money off of you, and if you're sick and they prolong your disease condition, they can make much more.
Yeah, and all Rife was doing was curing people for basically a few pennies worth of electrical input to his machines, and that doesn't make it.
No, not for Merck or any of the other pharmaceutical companies.
No. And the so-called war on cancer has raised over, I think, $1 trillion or something to date, and we got now people, one out of two people will have to deal with cancer. So there you go. All right, what are some of the other things, Richard? When you were out in the forest and spending time alone, did you have any encounters with odd things?
I'm not sure. If you can think of something from the book, please mention it. Mostly what I find when I'm in the forest is a sense of great peacefulness. You know, when I was completing my forestry degree, I lived in Coconino County in northern Arizona. And in the forest there around Flagstaff, the National Forest there, you can just hike for miles and miles and not see another person all day long. And there were occasions where I went out and walked maybe just 10 or 15 miles observing the wonderful pine forest. It's the largest contiguous ponderosa pine forest in the world there in the Flagstaff area. And I can't say I had many unusual experiences in the sense of a kundalini activation, for example. But I did have some mind-expanding hikes. There's just nothing like getting out in nature and away from the roar and the din and the hustle of the major urban areas. There's nothing like it to clear your mind, to still your soul, to make you think long thoughts that are very refreshing and inspiring.
And you know, there's a mechanical reason for that peace and tranquility, which has to do with physically getting yourself away from the intensity of electromagnetic signals, microwave signals that all urban areas are infested and drowning in. So you get away, all of a sudden your feet are able to connect with the planet and sense its ever diminishing gravitational, well, magnetic field, let's just keep it to that. And you do then polarize to the Earth, and you can feel immediately the difference.
Well, you're walking through the woods, you're brushing against bushes and trees, and you're exchanging energy with them. Your electromagnetic field is interpenetrating theirs, and you're also exchanging molecules with them. You're breathing the oxygen they're giving out, and they, on the other hand, are uptaking the carbon molecules that you are breathing, and it's a very meaningful give and take. We're wrapped in a mutual life-giving embrace, we and our photosynthesizing brethren.
Taking a little conversational stroll in some interesting areas with Richard Sauter tonight, his book Kundalini Tales, and if you'd like to call in, if you think you've heard voices or know anybody who has, give us a call. Some of these patents are just, pardon the pun, mind-blowing. I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten, Richard, in the past, couple of years now. People start getting wise to this idea of hearing voices not being something that is necessarily a natural occurrence, but an artificially created and intentionally induced state that you have spelled out in the back of your book with these patents. And as you said, goodness knows how many things aren't patented that are probably more than operational, and we just don't know. And then on the other side of the coin, we look at the deterioration in our environment, which many say is it's going, as they say, and nearly gone. Water shortages in parts of the world in the next 25 years will pose, I am told, the greatest single threat to food production and human health on the planet.
Yeah.
Over a billion people worldwide have no access to really clean water right now, and it's going to get worse. Water.
Yeah. We're poised at a very peculiar moment in history where I have the feeling all hell is getting ready to break loose, and it already has in some places, such as Central Africa, in Iraq, and elsewhere. We are, for whatever reason, bent on plunging ourselves into an apocalypse of our own making. Why we are so intent on doing this, I don't know, but
Richard, I've raised this before. Let me pose it to you. It has been suggested by some people that the moneyed elite, which is really raping the planet and has been for decades now, knows somehow at some level that it's too late or something is coming that they can't control and the toilet is going to be flushed, and so why try to stop the rape and pillage? And I see no evidence of multinational corporations trying to reverse the environmental catastrophe that humankind
has fomented.
No, they're
accelerating.
Yeah.
They're accelerating. The mentality is, oh, there are only 50 years worth of trees left. Well, I'd better cut them before someone else does, because if I don't, I won't make any money, and they'll make the last money that there is to be made off of the last tree. So there's only one tree left. I'll quickly cut it before anyone else does.
That's the
mentality.
There's a Dr. Seuss book called The Lorax, I believe, that told that very same story.
Well, it's sad. It's
sad. It's the highest crime that humanity has ever perpetrated on the planet, because we've destroyed our own nest.
We're in the middle of a mass extinction event, such as has not been seen for tens or perhaps 100 million years or more. It's mind-boggling. We're right in the middle of it. It will get worse over the next years, and where it will all stop, I don't know. Perhaps with a runaway environmental collapse that will make the living envy the dead. I don't know, but we may soon find out.
Well, that's to assume that we don't biochem or nuke ourselves into a state of prehistory before then.
Yeah, one of the reasons I wrote Kundalini Tales was to, by setting down events from my own life, say, you know, there's reality as presented to you in your daily newspaper, in the television, over the radio. And then there is reality, plastic reality, that I, the individual Richard Souter, experience, and by implication that you, the individual reader or listener, can experience for yourself too. You don't have to accept this mass reality which is artificially created and crammed down our collective throat. You can bring forth your own reality and live your own reality. And far from trying to copy what Richard Souter's life is like, just be true to your own inner self, which, after all, has its own rhythm, its own rhyme, its own reason for being here. Express your own innate humanity, and let's see what happens when we all do that. I think it could be something very precious.
In the afterword of the book, you mentioned, this is very interesting, the enchanting play of the Kundalini is never ending. The Kundalini works its magic in all beings everywhere for all eternity. I cannot tell you where it comes from and where it goes. I only know that it is real, stupendously powerful, and enticing beyond description. For me, the Kundalini represents a supremely free and creative aspect of universal consciousness. It would seem almost that the people in charge of the destruction of the planet just aren't getting it. They're not tuned into this issue. They're on such a different level, or maybe they're different people. David Icke would suggest that they're not people.
I was struck by an entry that Whitley Strieber had in his journal recently, which he has up on his website, by the way. And he had a, Whitley recounts some kind of encounter he had with a being that he's unsure of the identity. He's not sure, I believe, whether this being is a human being or some other type of being that is human seeing. In any event, he asked the being about this question of the soul, whether all humans have souls. And the being said, not all, but all may. And it would appear that, in principle, any and all human beings can have a soul. However, in practice, not all do. It seems that we have the capacity to decide whether or not we want to have a soul, A, and B, what kind of soul we will have, if we decide to have a soul. And it may be that not all humans are human in just the same way.
That point was made at a remarkable conversation with a PhD, an MD psychiatrist, Dr. Shakuntala Modi, last week, who has determined that during her research of counseling her patients, that past lives and past life incidents are largely at the root of many physical and emotional illnesses. And she made the point that the soul can be fragmented, and we only have part of our soul. It was very interesting. To get the pieces back is the trick. Be right back with Richard Souter in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Don't forget sightings.com. They're for you right now, 24 hours a day. And back with Richard Souter. And on the line is Gary Tenuta. Hello, Gary. Good evening. Listening on KRKO up near Everett. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. We're just waiting for the big windstorm to knock the power out, so if I get cut off, that's why.
Oh, you got a big one going up there?
Well, it's expected to hit any minute, I guess.
What, 100 mile an hour?
Oh, no, but between 50 and 70, I
that's
think.
That's good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough. And your guest name, I believe, is Richard?
Richard Souter.
Richard.
S-A-U-D-E-R-P-H-D.
Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you doing?
Well, just fine. You know, I wanted to relate to you a couple of things that happened to me on an aircraft carrier in 1967, because yeah. I've wondered for a while if maybe I was the target of one of those technologies that can make you hear a voice and whatnot.
Yes.
And so I wondered what your opinion was, but I don't want to sound paranoid. And, you know, I would have to, people would say, well, why would they pick you? Well, there were people on the ship that did know about my interests in parapsychology, UFOs, and whatnot. But what happened was I was alone in a room, and I heard a voice behind my head, just as if somebody was standing there, maybe 3 or 4 inches from me. And it was a man's voice. And it said, I'm going out on a limb here, guys. I don't tell a lot of people about this.
All right, well, you're among friends. Or
yeah, well, the voice said, you will be a minister. That was it, just short and sweet. And I looked around, and there's nobody there. It was very strange, and mm-hmm. I have no other way to explain what that was, since I'm not predisposed to believe that that was like the voice of God speaking to me. Within that same period of time, within probably 30 or 60 days, somewhere in there, I was in the ship's store. I was looking at some paperback magazines on Iraq, and not on Iraq, but on Iraq.
Got it.
And I looked up, and the walls of the store started closing in. And I knew, of course, that they weren't, but I kept looking at them, and they were all getting closer to me. And I sort of freaked out and went to see the ship psychologist or psychiatrist or whatever he was, and he said I was fine, don't worry about it. But those were interesting things to have happen, since they had never happened before or since.
I wonder how many people listening hear voices at one point or another, and if those voices seem to come from without, as Gary's do, or from within the skull itself. The mind.
Yeah, I think the technology exists to make the voice appear to be either just outside the head or inside the head. And it's interesting that you mentioned the Navy. The Navy has been involved in a lot of covert projects in recent decades. They have had an interesting experience with the Navy myself, which I recount in Kundalini Tales. I think the Navy, perhaps the Office of Naval Investigation, is involved in some of this electronic mind control activity. And if you're on a naval vessel, you're certainly in a confined space.
Oh yeah.
And you can easily be physically located and surveilled. You're not going to leave the ship. So you'll be easy to find. Your whereabouts is certainly known 24 hours a day, aren't they?
Oh, that's right, definitely.
So you can quite easily be targeted if that were the intent.
Now, let me, what would be the intent? Why would they do such a thing? Let's just assume that that's what happened. And for the sake of argument, would it just be testing?
Yeah, you'd be, if I wasn't there, I don't know what you perceived, but taking your story at face value, why would someone or an agency hypothetically do that?
Mm-hmm.
If this story is true as told, and if the voice were artificially generated for that purpose, then you essentially would be a guinea pig. You would be observed to see what your reaction is, to see what kind of influence hearing a voice may have on your later behavior and life decisions and so forth. And over time, doing that to enough people, a database could be compiled that would permit, if the Navy were doing this or some other agency, would permit that agency to determine what kind of effect broadcasting certain messages will have on individuals in the aggregate. They fine-tune their methods that way.
Well, it can sure make a person paranoid.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say this little incident, which lasted, well, what would it take to say that? A split second,
yes.
Those few words, has, you know, been in the back of my mind all these years. Of course, wondering what the heck that was.
Well, it focuses your mind on this thought, that it's possible, if that was an artificially generated voice, to make you hear voices that aren't there. And it's probably also possible, after reading the patents that I have, to extract thoughts right out of your brain and record them in a computer. We are guaranteed by the United States Constitution certain rights of privacy and certain rights against unlawful intrusion into our persons and our personal effects. I would think that would include your own personal thoughts, the sanctity of the space within your skull. But today, that's not guaranteed anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, Richard, thank you for your opinion. I'm looking forward to seeing your book.
Thanks, Gary.
You can get it from Amazon.com if you're online.
Oh, I am. Yeah,
or
great.
Just go to Amazon.com and type in my name, Richard Souter, or the title Kundalini Tales, and it'll come up. Or if you want to call an 800 number, you can call 1-800-905-8367. And order the book.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Very good, Gary. Thank you. Blake in Jefferson, Texas is on the line listening to us on the Internet, unless I am mistaken. Are you there, Blake?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi. What I was calling about is kind of stupid.
You wouldn't waste our time now. Come on.
Well, I would try not to.
There you go.
Really, I called in because I just found the website just now, surfing.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to try to find out if you had an affiliate around here.
Not yet. We're working on Texas, though. Don't forget, pick up that phone and make some calls and requests. It matters.
Okay.
You have a question for Richard?
Not really.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I'm glad you found the site and the show. And by all means, do call your local affiliate. And as many are doing, we're getting a lot of great support, and we're getting things to happen. It's called guerrilla marketing, in a way. We don't have the big money that some of the big folks do, so we rely on our listeners, and they are just terrific. Okay, we're coming up on our next break. We'll get to some more calls as we continue. My guest is Richard Souter, Ph.D., and if you haven't been to the website, you just heard Blake had just found it. We have a tremendous amount of material up there for you. And the big story that we've opened an open forum on has to do with the alleged deadly ET encounter that was reported recently on Art's program. A man purportedly killed an ET. Pictures in the works. Many of you know about that, and we're soliciting input on that, and it's coming in very nicely, so we're putting up everything we get and having a little forum, as they say. Be right back in a couple of minutes. We're back, and let's head back to the telephones and say hello to Shamil in Portland, Oregon, listening on Hot Talk, KOTK. Hi.
Hi there. A few calls ago, there was discussion as to what the motives would be for the government to utilize such a program of mind control, and I'd like to mention that there's nothing more valuable than a soldier, particularly one that might be able to be influenced by subtle mind control or even more aggressive ones. And I also was curious as to how this might tie in perhaps to the abductions, where the experiences are, apparently it seems like a lot of the emotions and the things that they're exposed to during the abduction period are very emotional, very dramatic, very traumatic. If those couldn't be recorded, things like that couldn't be used for the military and the government, while the aliens are also utilizing at the same time the energy that they use to feed off of.
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, you used a buzzword there in the last part of your question. You mentioned aliens. Just because someone has a perception of an alien and or an extraterrestrial, it doesn't mean that what they are perceiving is objectively what they think they are perceiving.
Mm-hmm.
The introduction of these new cutting-edge mind control, electronic mind control technologies makes possible the insertion of virtual realities, electronic realities, into human consciousness. And someone with a weak mind or a mind that is easily confused or fooled, and that's the average person, by the way, will be persuaded they are seeing an alien or that they're in a flying saucer or on in another world. There's an Austrian researcher named Helmut Lammer who's done a lot of work on the abduction scenario, and he's found that there's heavy military involvement and interest in this so-called alien abduction phenomenon. He believes that a lot of what is perceived as being alien abductions in reality are abductions carried out by the military for the purpose of perfecting their electronic mind control technologies.
Yeah, they definitely seem to go hand in hand, and many of the people that are reporting their experiences while they're abducted oftentimes see the military and aliens working side by side with one another.
Yet so, it raises questions as to just what reality is being perceived and how that reality is being created.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. That's very true. And then there are those who say that, the government is abducting people who have been abducted by visitors to see what the visitors have been doing with the abductees, and it goes round and round.
Oh, yes. The problem is that we still have no solid, incontrovertible evidence of aliens or extraterrestrial visitors witness the forum that you just announced on your website. However, we do have incontrovertible evidence of decades standing of all manner of electronic mind control and of military interest and intervention in the whole range of UFO phenomena, including the abduction phenomena. So I'm thinking maybe we should look for the answers to many of these questions closer to home, like in the Pentagon.
Well, the amount of data, and by the way, those of you who are interested in mind control can go to any search engine and type in mind control and find any number of sites that really deal with this issue very
much. Well, you'll find more information than you can read in the whole week.
Yeah, it is loaded.
You'll have to sift through and find the wheat from the chaff. There's a lot of propaganda and mind control scams out there on those mind control fora as well. You will need to read with a discerning eye and separate the genuine from the false. But there is a residue, a core of legitimate experiences out there that if you study will be very revealing.
Tell us about another UFO. You mentioned several experiences. Did you ever see a classic disc as well?
No, I haven't seen a classic disc. Now, I did make a trip to New Mexico. I went up to Taos earlier this year, as a matter of fact. And on the way up, I was driving in a cab. The people who paid for my trip to New Mexico sent a cab to pick me up at the airport, and I drove from Albuquerque to Taos. And as we were going up through the Rio Grande Gorge, just south of Taos there, I happened to look up above the hills and noticed about five or six silvery, well, they did appear to be discs. I'll say they were discs. And they looked like they were up about 3,000 feet above where the altitude where I was. And they had a fluttering kind of motion. They were fluttering around. They appeared to be silvery, metallic. I don't know what they were. I would say their apparent dimensions were maybe 20 feet, 30 feet in diameter. That's what it appeared to me to be. I don't know what they were. I don't know that I was seeing a classic flying saucers, but they certainly resembled them. Whatever they were, maybe I was seeing a squadron or a group or a flock or a flotilla of flying saucers, but they had a fluttering kind of motion.
Heard that too. Yeah, there's so many weird things going on. Just in this week alone, in Georgia, we're getting reports. Here's a strange one. November 8th, a college-degreed medical specialist was commuting to his place of employment on the north side of Atlanta. As he drove south on Highway 400 near Dawson-Forsyth County line, he noticed a group of cylinder-shaped objects fly down in front of his truck.
Yes.
They began a series of darting movements directly over the roadway. He was shaken by the event and slowed his speed. He was able to observe the activity closely at about 6 a.m. despite some rainy weather and fog. He stated he saw 30 to 40 dark-colored objects, cylinder-shaped, and about 16 inches long by 6 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
They continued this activity for 10 minutes in front of his truck, getting as close as 20 feet away and as low to the pavement as 6 to 12 feet. He also noticed 6 or 7 round white lights in the overcast sky performing similar maneuvers described as like bees swarming.
Yeah.
Real strange stuff going on.
Well, we may be approaching a turning point
in our the collective experience of our species. And these may be what we may call reality foreshocks, presaging events that are to come, kind of like reflections or you know, when a ship is approaching a dock, for example, it pushes out bow waves in front of it that will be reflected off the dock back at the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that as we are approaching what Terence McGinnis might call the eschaton, I think, which may be maybe only a few years or a few decades away, that there are events that are that we cannot understand with our current level of understanding, but that are nevertheless already beginning to impinge on our consciousness, and that we are perceiving now in a fragmentary way without any real meaningful degree of comprehension. So we puzzle over these things greatly, lacking an adequate context in which to make sense of them.
Exactly right. Here's another little quickie from Massachusetts, November 14th. Jonathan reports he had a sighting. Along with five other witnesses, they saw a small pink ball circling in the morning sky. It was unlike anything we have ever seen, they said. It started circling slowly, then faster, until it shot away into the distance. They heard a low humming noise, then a sharp screech. The object left a blue streak as it quickly disappeared.
Yeah, there are going to be all kinds of phenomena like this. Earlier you asked whether any of your listeners had heard voices, and I must say that in my book I relate some instances where I have heard disembodied voices. A number of these have been very interesting. Let me mention one of them. When I was in jail in, I believe it was 1981, for demonstrating on a nuclear missile silo in Arkansas, I moved into an altered state one night wherein I heard the voice of Robert Monroe, the founder of the Monroe Institute in Virginia.
Hmm.
And you may have read this in my book, Jeff, but he said to me, as he always did when I heard him speak in an altered state of consciousness, he said, "Hello, this is Robert Monroe." And he went on to say, 30 years ago, when man first began to go into space, and he continued to tell me something that was very interesting. He mentioned that in the early days of the space program, that astronauts weren't just blasted willy-nilly into orbit on any day, at any time, at just any place, but that they were precisely inserted into orbit at just exactly the right location, in precisely the right manner, and that unless this were done, the mission would not be successful. And he conveyed to me that there was an esoteric aspect to this, a magical aspect, if you will.
Yes.
And, of course, that was 81. You're saying, well, 30 years ago when man first began to go into space, that would be 1951, but the first men weren't blasted into space until 60, 61, 62. So what is he talking about? Well, I think that he was referring, even in the early 50s already, when the high-altitude balloons started to go up. And they went up many, many miles. And I think that once you go above about 50 miles, you're considered to be in space.
Close enough for me.
Yes, and as well as some of the pilots of the various X aircraft went
sure.
Very high.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what he was talking about. But it was very interesting, and I go on and subsequently in that chapter to discuss the esoteric relationship between the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry and the manned space program at NASA.
Oh, and there are some very strange connections and more than coincidence.
Well, I talk about that in my book.
Yes. This is one of the most unique books of the year. It is called Kundalini Tales. We've just given you a taste of it. Richard Sauter, Ph.D. It's available at Amazon.com. Also, you can call 1-800-905-8367. Am I correct, Richard?
That's correct.
All right. Thanks very much for being here tonight, and congratulations on a most interesting book.
It was my pleasure, Jeff.
Thanks, Richard. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's our second hour. We'll be right back to do hour number three. If you use a cell phone or thinking about getting one, don't go away.